brand new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Kling.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. It feels like I haven't been on the interwebs podcasting for a long time since I took a week off, and then we lost our episode last week. So it just legitimately feels like it's been forever since I talked to these people.
Yeah, it has been a minute now.
Yeah, you know what doesn't take a minute, though, is ordering from our sponsor at Oasis Games. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can get 15% off your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. You get 4% off every order by using the code Would That Be Good. How was that transition? Was that up to your specs?
Yeah, I think that was pretty solid. I'm impressed that you just come up with these on the fly, really.
I was
honestly trying to figure out how you were doing it, and I'm like, okay, so he's probably thinking there's going to be a transition here, so just take whatever he says and then try to make it work with Oasis Games. But...
Nah, dude, I'll think of something. They're so easy to promote. That's all there is to it. Because they're also sponsoring our Discord event. It's actually pretty cool. So we're having a Discord tournament here in a couple of weeks. You can join the Discord, get free entry to the tournament. We're accepting registration already. There's a Discord chat in there letting you register for the tournament early. So if you want to be a part of this $500 free arena tournament, just go ahead and jump in that Discord and join there. And you can win some sweet, sweet store credit to use at our sponsor.
That seems like a really good deal.
Free. It's free 99, man. It's the best price. It's the best one. There's not a better one. You know what else that there's not a better one of? Our patrons. You know, our patrons are just the best. They're the best ones. And James H. is our newest patron. Shout out to James for joining the patron this... It was actually last week, but we missed the episode. Just because, you know, things got lost in the ether. But shout out to James. It means the world to us. And there's a lot of things coming with the Patreon, Matt. We got a tokens update. You're looking fresh as a construct, kind of just in that final stretch of finishing yours out. Then we'll be getting Obis made, and then we'll get a reprint of My Dragon, and we'll start sending those tokens out to patrons. It's pretty exciting.
I'm definitely excited for my token.
Yeah. Could, on a scale of 1 to 10, tell the listeners, do you like it?
Oh, yeah, it's like an 11.
Yeah. Wow, for you, that's like a 40. Matt's all stoked on his construct token. So, also, there's some changes coming because we're bringing back the Deck Doctor segment. We actually did a Deck Doctor last week for some decks that got lost on the podcast. We're really sorry, especially since those people were going to the Pro Tour. I felt super duper bad. But the segment is back, and it will be replacing the final segment of the show. So rather than doing the... you know, what we would play on the podcast, we'll be doing a What We Would Play podcast every month, where we kind of just sit back and talk about what we play and why, kind of the old style of our Patreon-only episodes that we did in the past, with additionally taking topics from the listeners. So there'll be like a main topic that's presented by $10 or more patrons, and then all Patreon people will get that episode. So it's kind of like a two-for-one. You get a main topic presented by one of the $10 patrons, and then you also get, you know, the What We Play in My segment. So those will be coming back this month. We're really excited for it. You know, Matt and I, you know, have to get on the same schedule. We got new hosts going on, so so things change. But we're bringing those back, and they should be coming soon. So speaking of things that are coming back, Matt, I think tomorrow we get a battle in Standard for Constructed Clash.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that also.
So, we're going to do it as though Oko is banned. Is that the agreement?
I think that's fine, although, if I'm being honest, the deck that I would play in Standard right now doesn't contain Oko.
Well, there you go. So, Matt will be playing a non-Oko deck anyway, and I will be playing a non-Oko deck, assuming we're going to play as though Oko will get banned, and you'll be able to see that content over on the YouTube channel. But let's get into our main segment. Hashtag always improving is the... Not our main segment. Our first segment. I don't know what I'm doing. But hashtag always improving is the point of the show. We want to be getting better all the time. And, you know, there's nothing that helps you get better than sweet, sweet, sweet revenge, Matt Kling.
Yeah. Yeah. I got crushed this weekend by you, so...
To be fair, though, you crushed me at the Game Grid Championship. So
that's true.
I think yours was definitely worth, you know, a bigger smile and more equity. Although mine was a bigger tournament.
Yeah, I can believe that. Yours was probably worth more monetarily as well.
Possibly.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
I don't know. They're both 1Ks, right? It depends on how the prizes are structured.
Yeah.
So, either way, it was a good match. I quote unquote won the 1K as I split in the finals of the 1K this weekend. And I learned a lot about Pioneer. I also learned about Modern because we also had a Modern 1K this weekend that we did teamed up with Jonathan Jobe. You and I teamed up with him. And I really feel like I'm getting the hang of Amulet Titan, something that I've wanted to learn for a long time. Finally, I'm putting in the work to do so. And it's nice. I made a couple misplays. I think I tweeted out kind of, maybe I didn't tweet out, maybe I posted it somewhere. But either way, I made some small player mistakes that I think that I had turns where I could have been like transmuting for things like Cavern of Souls and kind of like small decisions like that that I wasn't doing as much. But recognizing those really gives me, I think, a big boon in trying this deck moving forward. But you believe that this deck actually doesn't have a good matchup against the best deck in the format anymore.
Yeah, I think that's the consensus around a lot of the players that have played the
Amulet side.
Simic Urza deck.
And specifically the players that play the Amulet side, right? Like these players are no longer playing Amulet because of this.
Well, to be fair, a lot of the players that were playing Amulet, and like especially in the SEG circuit, were the ones that invented the Simic Urza deck.
Sure, that's fair. But that being said, I learned a lot in both situations. I have an updated green red list for the kind of the deck that I played at the 1K. But I think one of my biggest learnings this week, we'll actually talk about on the podcast this week, Matt, which is just kind of how powerful the London Mulligan has become for these decks.
Yeah, the London Mulligan is a really powerful tool. I'm pretty excited to get into it specifically for this topic. But yeah, I have some thoughts about it that I think might not be common beliefs, I guess.
Awesome. What about you? What did you do to improve this week?
So to improve at Magic this week, I did what I always do, play a lot of Magic. I played multiple 1Ks this weekend, as well as, a bunch on Arena. And yeah, I think that I didn't play as well as I could have this weekend. Like, certainly in our match that you and I played, you definitely outplayed me. You sideboarded much better than I did in the matchup, and I think that I also kept a bad hand in the last game that we played.
Yeah. You know, the matchup I think is probably slightly in your favor. But I also think that I had tech for the matchup that people weren't playing during the PTQ. So it's interesting to kind of like see that back and forth happen in Pioneer right now.
Yeah, definitely.
Like I saw people playing Lifecrafters Bestiary. I think it was in the challenge with their Green Devotion decks, and I was like, how did we not think of that at the very beginning? Like, how was that not one of the first thoughts that we had, like, building a sideboard for these decks going into this format?
You know that I had a playset of bestiaries in my sideboard this weekend, right?
I just mean for the Devotion deck.
I mean, I don't think that the deck necessarily needed it before, right?
That's fair. Maybe it
It's
was so fast that it didn't matter.
more it's it was both faster and also it had there were like natural predators to the control decks in the form of four colors of Healy, and
Sure.
like you needed to have better answers to decks like that as well.
That's fair. That's fair. So, what do you think that you could have done to play better?
Well, I definitely could have sideboarded better. I did not understand what the matchup was about. I should have sided in sweeps against you and didn't realize how much of a Field of the Dead deck your deck was going to be. Like,
Sure.
in my mind, it was more like mono green control that I was sideboarding against.
Right.
But as far as the actual gameplay, I definitely could not keep a hand with only a Gilded Goose. Because the problem was that basically with the deck, you can never keep a hand that doesn't have one into three. And the problem with the hand that I had kept was that it was Gilded Goose into three drop, but that's usually only good if you can play Oko, which I did have Oko, but the Oko is so bad in the matchup that I think that I needed to actually mulligan for specifically Lana Worlds into
Sure.
or Lana or Mystic into a three mana creature.
That makes some sense. Anything that you think you could have done better in the other 1K?
In the modern one, I'm sure that there are things that I misplayed on. I definitely got distracted at one point when Jonathan and I were discussing a line during my opponent's turn, or it was during my main phase. We were discussing a line, and then I passed the turn to them, planning to Cryptic Command, and
Oh, that one turn.
ended up waiting till combat, cast Cryptic Command, and my opponent had drawn Stubborn Denial for the turn. So if I had been more aware of my own match, I could have Cryptic Command in the upkeep and maybe been able to draw out of it.
Sure, that's fair. Yeah, I think that, one of the cool things about this weekend for me was just how many more player decisions it seemed like there were than usual. And I don't know if that had to do with the decks that you and I were playing at the and possibly even Jonathan at the 1-1K, and then just kind of how diverse and different Pioneer is. But one of the things that I noticed is just myself getting better at sequencing with the ramp deck throughout the day, which is just one of the most important parts of playing ramp decks. Just understanding, like, okay, this is what keeps look like, this is what your sequencing looks like, and I think that's really important to, like, this is something that I think that I'm good at in Smash too, is just like being able to adjust as I learn things very quickly. And I'm glad that I can see that in my Magic game again. Well, let's move on to our next segment this week. We're gonna just talk about the Pro Tour for our power rankings. No power rankings this week. Kind of just wanna learn about what you and I both thought of the Pro Tour. So let's start with best decks. You and I would have played the exact same deck going into the Pro Tour, and that was Simic Food. You and I both were higher on Simic than Sultai or Bant. Matt, why were we higher on that?
Well, I had played some of the Simic and a lot of Simic and a little bit of the Sultai, and had concluded that, as I've said on this podcast before, that none of the black cards were worth the mana being that bad.
I think that episode didn't make the air for what it's worth.
Oh, that's probably true. The long story short of it is that it's a very painful mana base. You are slightly it's somewhat likely that you can get color screwed, although, not super likely. And I just didn't feel like any of the black cards were even necessarily better than the blue cards that I was already playing. Like, Casualties of War is probably better than Mass Manipulation, but not like so much that I'm willing to splash for a double black spell. And
Sure.
I think Brazen Borrower might just be better than Noxious Grasp in most of the spots, so.
What do you think of Raska?
Braska's okay. It's a little bit awkward on the draw, even against the Oko decks, though.
That's the biggest thing that I noticed playing the deck was just the Vraska didn't even seem that good in the mirror. So like, if I'm in a splash of color, I want it to like really impact like that matchup.
Yeah, to be fair, I think that most of the splash is actually for the Selesnya matchup. Like, that matchup is insanely hard without Massacre Girls.
That's fair. That's a good point. Well, other than that, which we both thought would be great, it obviously took down the tournament. I think it was just a mirror in the finals. What do you think that were the best decks to come out of this tournament?
Well, I think it's interesting to point out that, like we predicted, Simic was better than Sultai at the Pro Tour. Like, if you looked at the overall win percentages, it performed better than Sultai did, and it also won basically all of its matchups in the top eight. So I think that's pretty noteworthy, especially given that, obviously the players playing at the Pro Tour that decided on Sultai aren't bad players.
Right.
They're definitely good, and the overwhelming majority came to the conclusion that Sultai was better, and I'm interested to think about what that means, right? Like, it seems like people are interested in getting a leg up and are willing to convince themselves that they are getting a leg up by doing something, not of the norm, quote unquote, even if it's not necessarily true.
Yeah, it's
Like,
interesting, right? Like,
it's hard to go into a tournament with the best players in the world and say, I don't need an advantage, I'll just play them straight up.
no, it's true, and it's funny, right? Because like, Brad Nelson picked Sultai, right? Like, if there was a person that you would think that like was not going to do that if it wasn't better, that'd be the person.
Yeah.
And obviously, that's not how it happened. Like, he straight up picked Sultai, and then you see PV, who literally wrote an article that Sultai was better the week before the Pro Tour, switched to Simic.
Yeah. Yeah,
So
pretty interesting.
There's definitely a lot to dissect there, but that is not the best performing deck. Neither of those were the best performing deck at the Pro Tour, Matt.
No, they weren't. Yeah, I think we had one of those unicorn moments at this Pro Tour where something that was mostly, if not completely, undiscovered beforehand came out of the Pro Tour and just completely broke it.
Yeah, so that would be cat food, as they're calling
Is that what they're calling? I've seen it called Sultai Aristocrats. If you look at, there was a GP in Richmond on Saturday, Sunday this week. And if you looked at the top eight of that, it was like half of the decks in the top eight were Sultai Aristocrats.
Yeah, so this is the Sultai cat deck with Cat and Cauldron, playing Oko, Goose, Wicked Wolf. Yeah, this is the I think they're crediting Team East West Bowl for this deck. Formerly Mastrop. What do you think of this? I mean, you have an opinion, so I'll just let you go.
Well, I think there's good reason for one to not credit them necessarily with the creation of this deck because I did see
A popular streamer, you said.
a popular streamer had played almost the same 60. I think it was two cards different. Like he was only playing two Trail of Crumbs and then four Wicked Wolves instead of vice versa.
Sure.
But at any rate, I think this deck is pretty great. The only thing that I want to continue to explore is I'm not sure that Oko is necessarily the way to go. I think right now I'm leaning towards Mayhem Devils in that spot because you're only splashing blue for Oko and then like a couple of sideboard cards.
Right. What is and the red gives you Mayhem Devil and
That's pretty much it. Just Mayhem Devils right now. I
sure.
mean, it's possible there are sideboard cards that I haven't thought of yet, but
So the Jund version of this deck I knew about before. People had
yeah,
played that deck.
I agree, but if you've ever looked at any of the Jund lists, they're not the same. Like I don't think Oko was what was innovative about this list or what broke this
So
list.
what do you think was the difference?
I think the difference was the main deck Massacre Girls and the four Trail of Crumbs.
So
It's
playing
like
something
it's
like
much more of an engine deck.
so the skir so the red deck is not playing the 3-mana Scourge anymore, is that what you're saying? What is her
The
name?
Scourge.
The Lord that the Aristocrat's Lord that gives +1/+0 whenever something dies, you deal one damage.
Are you talking about Judith?
Yeah, Judith, there we go.
Right. I haven't seen them playing that anyway.
Which is what I played against on Arena. When I played against the Jund food decks or it was actually called Jund Sacrifice for what it's worth. So obviously they're very different archetypes, right? One is a Jund Sacrifice deck. One is very much a Wicked Wolf, goose deck. And that's kind of worth noting.
That's it. Is it worth noting though? Because that's where it's interesting, right? Because like the lines are getting a lot blurrier than they were before. Because like I mean, in the sacrifice decks right now, you're playing four Gilded Geese and then two main deck Wicked Wolves, and some of them are playing more in the sideboard.
Right.
So if you're playing Gooses and Wicked Wolves and Okos, like what are we defining as a food deck?
I don't what I Here's the thing is we're going to have to figure this out. Like the thing is Oko's gone. Like that card is not sticking around. I just have no doubt at this point. And I don't know, like is if things still food or they Jund sacrifice?
I would expect that the food decks that we're thinking of as food right now probably don't exist anymore without Oko.
Sure.
I don't think you're going to play as many mana dorks as you were before, but I think that the Jund Sacrifice deck is going to be totally fine and still the best deck if nothing changes
Okay.
with that deck. Like, I mean, of course Oko is going to get banned, right? But we have no idea what else is going to get banned, if anything. Like, maybe they ban Oko and Once Upon a Time, or like Oko and Gilded Goose in Once Upon a Time or something like that, you know?
I hope not.
You say that now, but
Whatever.
I
If
don't
they're
know.
maybe it'll be Oko Veil of Summer, Matt.
That could be true also. I'm not really seeing holes in the Sacrifice deck's game plan right now. Like I'm not sure what you could possibly do to attack that deck.
But that being said, like, to be fair, just for this was not part of the podcast, but I'm glad we're having the conversation. Like the food, the deck that you're talking about didn't exist before the Pro Tour. So like, and people said that Simic and Sultai were unbeatable and they should be banned. And before that, it was Feel the Dead was unbeatable. And like, what's like at some point we just have to accept that we need to innovate and we need to accept where we're at. You can't just ban something every
I agree.
Time there's the best deck. Like
I agree. And honestly, I don't mind playing rematches enough to necessarily want there to not be a best deck. Like I thought this standard format was great. I was really enjoying the Simic rematches. So
sure. Well, with that being said, did you learn anything from this Pro Tour?
What's
that? We didn't get to watch it. I said, did you learn anything? We didn't get to watch a ton, mostly because we were playing all weekend. But
I got to watch a little bit, and what I learned is that people that top 8ed this Pro Tour are great at Magic.
Yeah, I mean,
it was very, very skill intensive Magic.
Yeah, seeing the, you know, the end result being Andre versus PV in that top 8 was, I don't know, it seems telling.
Yeah, it was very reassuring to me. Like, when you looked at the, thinking about, like, Pro Tour, Black, Red, Mid-Range, like, the Pro Tour I went to, it did not seem like the best players were necessarily migrating towards the top tables. Like, obviously, a lot of the best players had good finishes, but there were also, you know, there's just a lot of great players at the Pro Tour.
Sure.
But this one, it definitely felt like the better players were winning more often.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I gotta watch. I did watch the video posted by, oh my gosh, I can't remember his name. It's Matt, but I don't remember Matt's last name off the top of my head. But either way, it's a breakdown of PV's bluff attack with an island. And it was a very interesting video. Just kind of watching that. I think it's like high level Magic videos or something. But then, either way, check it out. It's really cool. And just kind of this talk about this bluff where PV attacks into this Oko that's at 4. With a Wicked Wolf on the other side that the island can trade with, but PV actually doesn't want the island to trade. But, like, he kind of talks through, like, why PV ultimately makes the attack and why it's a great play. And it was really interesting. And that type of stuff and, like, that type of content being produced from this Pro Tour, I think speaks to the level of play at this Pro Tour, where, like, the edges have to be gained from that kind of stuff rather than just from deck building and deck selection. So cool.
Yep.
Well, I think that'll wrap up our reactions to the Pro Tour. Unless you want to say anything else, do you want to call PV the goat out on the podcast?
He certainly might be the goat. I don't know. It's so hard to say, right? Like,
he's the goat.
Depends on what you're defining as the goat.
He's probably the goat. Like, at some point, we just got to admit that, like, by the end...
The thing is, I'm not sure that PV is the GOAT on any metric right now, right? Like, if you added them all up, maybe, but, like, not on any one metric, right? Like, he doesn't have the most Pro Tour top 8s. He doesn't have the most Pro Tour wins. He's probably not the best player, like, from a technical standpoint right now.
Not at this moment. But there are certainly times where he has been.
I agree. But that's what I'm saying. Like, if you add everything up, maybe. But, like, I don't think that he's winning on any one axis.
That's fair. PV has 2 player of the years, right?
I'm not sure.
I think he does. I'm not sure. Somebody leave a comment. Let me know. Either way, I just shout out to him. Shout out to Andre. It was a good feeling for this. We keep calling it a Pro Tour, by the way. So the comments are already going to be lit with this being saying this is a Mythic Championship. But either way, this was a cool Mythic Championship / Pro Tour. And so many people were calling it the last Pro Tour because players' tours are starting. And, you know, I think it was a good finale to, like, an era of Magic.
Right.
So, well, let's move on to our main segment, Matt. This is something that you really wanted to talk about when you came on to co-host the show. You want to talk about the London Mulligan. I'm going to read you 2 quotes. One was said by me, and one was said by you. And they were also said in conjuncture. So, tell the listeners who said this. Ready? I won every mold of 5 this weekend. End quote. I think I mulled the 5 more than I kept 7, end quote.
The latter was said by me, and the former was said by one Spencer Howland.
Okay, so literally, straight up, won 100% of matches all weekend, or not matches, games, all weekend that I mulliganed to 5 between both of my decks.
I think you should just start on 5, I'll let you. I'll allow it.
And you said you think you kept 5 more than 7, and I think that was true for me too. It's very possible it was.
I said that early in the tournament, and it definitely became more true as the tournament went on.
Okay, so what has changed? Like, what in the we're going to 5 this happily?
So, this is something I really wanted to touch on. So I think it's important to realize that you're still going to want to keep lands and spells in most decks. Basically, if you're mulliganing aggressively to 5, that can be right. But what it means is that you think that your deck has a better chance with a good 5 than a bad 7, right? Or than a mediocre 7, rather. So your deck has to have something really powerful that it's trying to draw to. Like, in Standard currently, mulliganing to 5 is kind of fine, right? Because, like, you have Gilded Goose into Oko or whatever.
And Nissa, yeah.
And Once Upon a Time to facilitate the whole thing, but...
And that was true of both the decks that... All of the decks that I played this weekend were Once Upon a Time decks.
Yes, as was the deck that I played. It basically... any hand that I was keeping... I was playing Simic Stompy for the listeners. And any hand that I was keeping that had Llanowar Elves into a 3-drop, like Steelleaf Champion, Yorvo, Lovestruck Beast, was better than any 7 that didn't have that. So it's just... It's kind of like the Tron thing, right? Like, Tron can win on mulligans to 3 because a good 3 is so much better than a mediocre 7.
So let's talk about Tron for a second, because when Once Upon a Time was printed, everybody said this is just going to break Tron wide open, and that's not what happened.
Yeah, I never really subscribed to that.
But in that same theory, why isn't it true? Like, if we're saying that the thing that you have to be doing is something powerful that you don't care about going down for, and Once Upon a Time facilitates that, why isn't Tron just suddenly the best deck in Modern?
Well, I don't think that Tron is struggling with getting turn 3 Tron anymore. I think that that's not where the deck is falling short. I think that enough decks are beating turn 3 Tron that that's why the deck isn't the best deck.
Okay.
As far as why Once Upon a Time specifically isn't good, I think it has a lot more to do with the fact that it doesn't grab Planeswalkers or Oblivion Stone.
Sure. So the deck that I was playing this weekend, you know, I also couldn't grab my Ugins. I still managed to do just fine. Like, where's the hiccup here? It's not like you can't build Tron to be like a Worldbreaker deck all of a sudden.
Well, I think Tron has better tools, though. If you had Tron lands and Expedition maps, I definitely wouldn't play Once Upon a Time in your deck either.
Sure. That's fair.
And Ancient Stirrings, like the whole operation, right?
So,
like, you already have so much consistency in that deck, right? Like,
so we mentioned two decks, right, that we both played with Once Upon a Time. Three, really, you know, two big mana decks and this Once Upon a Time aggressive one drop to three drop deck. Are there any other decks outside of Once Upon a Time decks that have this kind of power that get rewarded from the London Mulligan?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Like we were just talking about Tron, right? Isn't a Once Upon a Time deck, and it still benefits that way.
Sure.
I think a lot of combo decks are like that. Like Turbo Depths and Legacy is definitely very much a good 5 is better than any 7, or better than, you know, a subpar 7.
That makes sense.
But I think that it's important to remember that you still don't want a mulligan. Keeping is way better than mulliganing. If you have a hand that works, right?
Right.
Like, it's only when your deck has something specifically powerful that you're looking for. Like, mana accelerators are usually a big one, right? Like, Gilded Goose in 2-3 drop is so much more powerful than any, you know, 2 into 3.
I think it's
worth mulliganing for.
I think another really easy way to put this is it's just not worth keeping the greedy hands in the decks that can do this now. Like,
right.
Like,
yeah, even beyond greedy, like, but yeah, it kind of does speak to that, right? Like, if you are playing any kind of a card advantage deck, right, like Jund or whatever, I'm pretty much going to keep lands and spells unless I know what the matchup is specifically.
Right.
I know I need something else.
Right. Like, whereas if you're playing something where, like, this hand gets there if I draw these two specific things, and I'm this, like, synergy-based deck, or synergy has a lot to do with it, right? Like, Jund is trained to just break up your synergies. It doesn't really care. I mean, I don't think that... And then you have decks like Mono-Red that don't gain from this, right? This actually might be one of the problems in Pioneer, for what it's worth, with Mono-Red specifically, is that it doesn't gain from this, right? Because losing that card is worth so much more in that deck than... any amount of, you know, you're going to get your aggression, you're going to get your burn spells either way. That's not the point. The point is like, now I'm down on resources.
It's true. I do think that Mono Red benefits less, but like, basically you're not going to mulligan more often with Mono Red because of the land and mulligan, but what you are going to have is better mulligans, right?
That's true. Your sixes are definitely going to be substantially better.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every deck benefits from going back to seven and putting back a card. There's not a deck that doesn't benefit from it.
Right, but specifically decks that are running like greedy land counts like mono red are
Sure.
more susceptible to drawing sixes that just don't have any lands and then having to go to five, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So why is this? Well, let's actually back up. What is your new process here? I mean, we've kind of talked about it a little bit. I don't think there's something that we can solidify for the listeners here. So much of mulliganing is a skill. You know, there's not like a heuristic you can follow unless you're playing specific decks. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's just very deck specific now, even more so than it ever was before. Like before, my barrier was mostly like functional hand, and now it's functional hand unless my deck is doing something that I think is way better than what my hand is doing right now.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, there's as somebody who plays a lot of the land spells decks, right? Like Jund style decks or you know, these aggressively slanted gruel decks or these, you know, outside of those decks, you know, I think that something like Titan Shift this weekend, every time I kept like some hand that like needed X or Y, I just was like, this is so bad. I should have just mulliganed this and got something better. And I think the rule is kind of where you highlighted it, which is, you know, does your deck think X and why does it think X, right? You talk about your one into three drop and needing to keep that. You know, Tron needs to have Tron. You know, there are just specific things that you need to think about, and if your deck is thinking about those things, then you consider how aggressively you need to mulligan for that.
Right. And I was thinking today about sideboard cards as well. Some sideboard cards are so impactful that like mulliganing for them makes a lot more sense with the line of mulligan, right? Like I'm sure we've touched on this at some point with ley lines and things like that, but it occurred to me when I was playing a deck with Massacre Girl against Selesnya Adventures, and you know, for what it's worth, the Massacre Girls were in the main deck, but I didn't know that they were playing Selesnya Adventures in game one.
Sure.
But I think that it made sense to mulligan a little bit more aggressively for them, given that there were three in my deck and I get to keep mulliganing back to seven effectively.
Sure. Is there any, like, what is the reason this skill is important? I mean, other than the fact that obviously it's going to win you more matches once you get better at this, once you understand the London Mulligan a bit better and how your deck cares about it, is there more to it than that, though? What is the other kind of importance of this skill? Like, how is it going to help you other than that?
I think the biggest part is that if you don't learn it, you're going to fall behind because your opponents will be learning it. So it's more than just like, this is a skill I can learn to get a leg up in my competition. It's like, if I don't learn this, I'm specifically going to be behind.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that, you know, the advantage that it gives you now is that you're learning this now rather than having to learn this over a long period of time and adjusting your mulligan stuff if you're like dedicating yourself to like thinking about it this way. But also, you know, at some point, you know, whether you're playing in an SCG or a 1K or a 5K or, you know, going to a Grand Prix, the better players are going to start doing this more and more. So, you know, you at some point you just got to be on the same axis as them and be competing at the same level.
Right. I'm definitely a huge fan of the London Mulligan for what it's worth. Like it used to feel like if a game if somebody mulliganed 2/5 in a game, it was a big factor in determining the outcome of the match.
Yeah.
But now
I'm mulliganing to four this
I
weekend
both
for what
feel a
it's
lot
worth.
less I both feel a lot less bad for my opponents when they mulligan to five and feel a lot less bad for myself when I mulligan to
Yeah,
five.
I agree. Is there anything that you want people to take away from your experience specifically from this weekend with the London Mulligan because it was so prominent for you?
Yeah, I mean, again, I just look at the deck that you're playing because, like, I haven't had anybody tell me specifically that you can't keep a hand that doesn't have like a turn two steel leaf equivalent with Simic Stompy, but that was just a heuristic that I came up with myself, and you know, I stuck with it. Never had to keep a hand that didn't do that, and I think I was pretty well rewarded for that.
I mean, I think the same thing, but you look at Titan Shift, you know, or not Titan Shift, Amulet Titan. They say, you know, you got to keep your one mana stuff. The same thing is true in humans and modern, right? Like, people, all of these heuristics that people have helped develop for keeping hands in different formats, start applying them with the London Mulligan
Yeah,
and see how far you can push it.
I think the heuristic with humans before was don't keep a seven without a one.
Sure.
But like there were sixes you would keep without ones, but now I'm guessing that the heuristic is just don't keep a hand without a one.
But that's what I'm
Just the
saying.
reason
Take the
doesn't have to,
heuristic that
you
you've
know.
learned and push it, right? challenge that heuristic in some way. You know, the format has changed. The rules have changed. The game has changed. Like, let's challenge our previous rules and kind of move forward.
Right. Well, it just leads to a lot more interactive games of Magic, right? Like, there's so much less getting mana screwed, or just like, you know, just not having the spells to cast that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's just a lot better time, I think.
That is going to do it kind of for this, Matt, unless you have anything you want to kind of wrap up with.
No, I think that covered most of my thoughts on the Lenna Mulligan. Just like I said, consider whether your deck is a deck that wants to mulligan aggressively or not, and keep in mind that you're not nearly as punished for mulliganing aggressively as you once were.
Yeah. If you want to suggest future topics, might I suggest checking out patreon.com/ccmtg, where if you're a patron of $10 or more, you can even suggest the top four Patreon-only episodes. You can find me at SpencerThirtyH. You can find Matt at The Witch Cling. You can find the podcast at CCMTG. You can find our sponsor over at Oasis Games. And you can join the conversation on the Facebook group if you're a patron of $5 or more, or over in the Discord. So, you know, awesome places to join the conversation. And, you know, you get people from other shows, too. You know, there's an entire constructive criticism network of podcasts. You know, we just added a new Pioneer podcast. Tons of things going on in there. So join that Discord. Get free entry into that tournament. And, you know, that's the place to go, guys. Ready for Deck Doctor? All right, so we have a deck doctor from one of our lovely listeners. We have 4 Deathrite, 4 Stitcher Supplier, 4 Satyr Wayfinder, 4 Zeroport Cutthroat, 2 Cruel Celebrant, 4 Cartel Aristocrat, 1 Natuka Husk, 3 Jace of Rings Prodigy, 1 Renegade Rallier, 1 Plague Crafter, 1 Reflector Mage, 1 Grim Hierospex, 4 Rally the Ancestors, 4 Collected Company. We have 4 Blooming Marsh, 4 Botanical Sanctum, 4 Temple Garden, 4 Concealed Courtyard, 4 Mana Confluence, 1 Hollowed Fountain, 1 God of the Shrine, and 1 Watery Grave. Matt, what is the things that you love about this deck?
Well, I'd love Rally the Ancestors as an archetype. I'm happy to see that this person's list went 4 colors, because I did try this deck a little bit and determined also that I couldn't do it without 4 colors.
Yeah, so why did you need to determine that? Like, what's the reason?
Well, so I looked at the linchpin cards of the deck, right? So basically, you are priced into black, white, green, no matter what, right? Okay. Because you need the Zulaport Cutthroat effects. You need Sack Outlets, which are going to be all black.
And you need Satyr Wayfinder.
And you need... No, you don't need Satyr Wayfinder.
Oh, what's the green that you need?
No, you need Collected Company.
Oh, okay.
And then you need Rally the Ancestors. So those Abzan is a lock. Okay. I don't feel like the deck is doing anything powerful without Jace and Reflector Mage. So I would say that blue is also mandatory.
Okay.
But that one is a lot more debatable.
Okay. I know nothing about this deck, so I'm going to let you run with this deck, Doctor. Is there anything that if you were to try to do this again that you would change from this list?
Yeah, so I give some feedback. This was posted in our critics group, and I did give some feedback about this deck already. I don't actually love the self-mill stuff. I don't like the Satyr Wayfinders. I don't like the Stitcher Suppliers. I tried them both. The problem is that they actually add no value if you don't draw Rally of the Ancestors.
Okay.
So while that's good to add value to your rallies, like, Rally of the Ancestors will often win the game regardless, so you just don't really need that.
So what would you play in those kind of spots? Juicing your rallies
isn't really a thing.
Like Oko Goose? Like, what do we...
No. Yeah, I think the Deathrite Shamans probably don't work without them either, so you probably have to switch those out. I want more ways to try to find rallies, so I think things like Catacomb Sifter are pretty important. I also think that... This is just more of a personal feeling than anything else, but I actually think that Nantuka Husk is better than Cartel Aristocrat in this deck. I understand the appeal of Cartel Aristocrat, and I would certainly play some, but I think that Nantuka Husk and Reflector Mages are the better ways to win the game in Rally specifically.
Like, because you can bounce a lot of their board by rallying with the Mages, and then the Husk gets to the point where it just is a lethal kill.
Yeah, it just doesn't take very much, honestly, right? Like, if your opponent's just sitting at 10, which is not even, like, an unreasonable life total, like, you just, like, you know, you can even just, like, collect a company and hit, like, Reflector Mage, and then just bounce their whole board and sack everything and then lethal them pretty easily.
Okay. Where do you think the deck stands? Is this something that you'd be willing to put more work into? Is this something that this person should consider putting more work into? What do you think it lines up against the decks that people are playing right now?
Yeah, I think it certainly could be. Like, I was playing a little bit of Bant Company earlier today, and I thought that deck had legs. And while I was playing it, I was thinking about it and thinking that, in my experience, Rally was like a better version of Bant Company in Standard.
Sure.
So.
That makes sense. Well, hopefully that was helpful for our listener. Thank you everybody so much for listening this week. Don't forget that like button. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and share the podcast. If you can't afford to come on Patreon, don't have the funds to donate to the show, or just don't think that we're worth it. If you still want to support the show, just throw us a share, throw us a retweet. That kind of type of stuff is actually really helpful and actually just means a lot. So talk to everybody next week on another episode of Constructive Criticism. I think you're worth it, Matt Kling.
Thanks.